2020. It's called DUI. I've been warned about the consequences, but I keep doing it anyway. I've been warned about the consequences, but I keep doing it and get away from the pros, the cons, and their sequences. I care not about any destination. All my short life, I've been driving under influences, sometimes in complete intoxication, because I've never had anywhere straight the way. No one ever realizes that I have no sense of direction. No map, sat nav, or GPS, let alone a plan. I have yet to come to my senses. Not that I care for reality through the windshield. I'm always drunk on some emotional substances. Considering how the others avoid me, anyway, the danger might be real. If I could tell how the state of emergency feels, I may be the one calling for assistance. This vehicle is the genuine article, and I'm riding it when I should be driving. Yet for this precious ship, I offer nothing but negligence. Keep it well enough to keep it moving. I take hitchhikers sometimes, those whose cars are stranded, and they are grateful. They offer more drugs we share, and we move forward, euphoric and forgetful. We exchange what we can, luxury item for polyester. All are valuable as long as they are rare. We don't need anything any better. But sometimes my chaotic driving scares them, and eventually they won't off. So they leave me to my device, driving hungover and feeling rough. Every curve, every day brings me closer to the accident. But I can't stop. I can't afford it. I didn't ask for the road nor for the car. So why should I feel or try to be fit?
Thank you, Cedric. Next is Bernadette Keller.
So I've read this one here at least once before, and the reason I'm reading it tonight is John Philip, my husband, has just left the bar. We knew eventually he would respond to my work or I would respond to his work. So he's responded to mine first of all. So he's done a few pictures based on this poem, and two of them are on exhibition down in Skibbereen. He just opened on Friday night. Another day on Patrick Street. Crouched beside you, covered by tarpaulin, on a mattress of sorts, in a doorway to somewhere. You doing a crossword, young, beautiful face, eyes tired from many sleepless nights. Your man lying back, up on one arm, brimming with possibility for the future. Construction engineer, you a bioscientist, studies arrested. Thank me for stopping for a chat. A chat, you say, is preferable to a euro any day. Thank you.
Thanks, Bernadette. Next up is Marcel Kroner.
Thinking what I could read today, and I thought a poem for the working class of poets might be a good opportunity. And this poem is called A Hole in the Wall, and I was told that the Australian called A Hole in the Wall for a cash machine. And that's the idea behind this poem. Hole in the Wall. There is a hole in the wall, and if you know the code, it might give out a poem worth reading on stage. There's a hole straight ahead. It is the entry and the exit too of ideas about the world described by different types of names. And next to the hole, someone may ask you who the words on your receipt belong to in the event you had taken it. But be careful with the letters of the alphabet. You don't know who invented it and for what reason. Therefore, give the questioner, which is the questioner's own, an image for what you possibly need headlines of thoughts like falcons and doves, dusk and dawn and east and west, prayers for love and peace. Sorry, you can't read for nothing here, as you might have supposed, because there is a hole in the world, behind the wall of good and evil that has inspired the poets. It has been tested in 1001 nights where 1001 soldiers already died. It has been proven during the heart attack, the riot against blindness and amnesia, and will be confirmed while you lie, laugh at laugh, with the news from your fellow occupant. Is there a hole beyond this world? But what entered? A gunshot? A spy of a little eye? Or details from your data bank account? There is a hole in the wall of the Poet Theatre, and you pay as you go on stage to remind us that another world is possible.
Brilliant. Thank you, Marcel. Next up is Callum de Goodies.
Stay with me one moment, I'm having a small difficulty. I'll get through it, I promise. Honolulu Eve on a last taxi to Eden. Bitter cold, taxis are fridge, no cash, can't afford the toll, litter and trash on the dashboard, stone bridges, polar bears and rare blue glare, silence for seatbelts on the bridge to nowhere. Alive, to be someone who has some well, cabby sight is slightly impaired, static loops accompany the erratic drive, a decade droops over a mile. Eve of Honolulu shakes her hood to the smile, affairs and farewells, another evening and the child's drunken dials, sunken in the company. Targets missed, broken arrows cause no sorrow. The apple spared for the ill of tomorrow. Taps hiss, but snake bites no longer exist, and Mephisto's tails are snared. There are no pardons for the misleading shared and borrowed in the Garden of Eden. Willow United, 1968. The Dawn Course, confessional of foreign games and far-fetched inventions. We listen then, enjoying our freedom, learning songs through a more communal medium. Dark mornings infuse the Icarus choir. The day was late in its late November laziness. Plodding along, he dreams of Americana. Thank you.
Thank you, Helen. And next up is Philip Spillane.
Thank you. So you know that new Facebook service where they like throw up old posts you drew up like years ago? Sometimes they throw up like an old poem I wrote when I was a teenager. And this one I wrote 5 years ago, and it was actually okay. A few spelling mistakes, depressing, immature depressing. So I picked it up and I brushed it up a bit, and I remember the theme, but I forgot I'd written it. So like, this is called, Now It's Cold, Daffodil Hill. Daffodil Hill. Told by the perception of a daffodil. My life is full of brief stops, a paragraph away till I return. When I do, I see it all, the changes of my hilltop home. Till one day I see a bitter sight, some unsatisfied beings approach my hilltop site. They wear my petal coats and ride on butter-colored thundercrafts, flattering my hilltop site, crafting a neighborhood. Till I'm the last one, a crowned daffodil, a yellow lonely signpost. But I'm not a witness, an observer, or a bystander. I've got no recollection or memory like the beings above. They've seen me and hug my green straw tight and dissect me from the earth without no fight. They'll plant me on a funeral pot, a grim grey grave stone plot, a building with a useless function that the beings utilize for illusion profit. But in a memory of one being's mind, they'll remember the sight of a daffodil hill, a golden yellow spread unevenly on greenery, once a year, once a paragraph in time. But that's the past, and now we are no more. None of us fight back or return. He will dream of a nostalgic sleep and name the estate Daffodil Hills, where there no daffodils grow. Yeah, it needs an ending. Thank you anyway.
Thank you, Philip. Next up is Mel White.
She thinks, when you die, you go to Buckingham Palace. St. Peter, in livery, stands to attention, holds the door of your winged Rolls Royce. A host of angels in starched linen curtsy, lined up at the pearly gates like the cast of Downton Abbey. Princess Diana sweeps down from a cloud, greets you like an old chum. You notice her outfit is a little passé, but darling, this is simply thrilling. Arm in arm, you swan past marble fountains and languishing cherubs, past the progs into the drawing room, where you shrug off Diana like yesterday's news, like last season's fashionable coat that slips from shoulders to floor for the servants to pick up. Angels slide into the wings like bridesmaids, melt into patterns on the Renaissance rug, because death is like a dream. And if it was my dream, we'd climb a stone spiral staircase lit by candles, or better still, flaming torches. At the top would be a steampunk spinning wheel come time machine, or Rapunzel, or at least a hippogriff, grazing amongst the roof turrets. And it'd be the castle at Legoland, with alcoves of life-size Lego tableau, intricate detail with thousands of bricks, which, as this was my heaven, I had designed and built. And there'd be a roller coaster, plummeting out of the tower. You'd grab my hand and together we'd waterfall over rapids, twist and somersault like Olympic divers and pour at last into a still underground lake in a cavern with stalactites, electric bluefish and purple phosphorescent light. But it's not my dream. It's hers. Instead, you float up a red carpet past flashing white smiles that want to feature you in Hello magazine, ostensibly supporting charity. In reality, about the dress, the great dress, the dress to end all questions of who is the best dressed. Unless, of course, you're not the right sort of person, in which case she thinks when you die, you go to Coronation Street or Butlins to perform an endless routine beneath fluorescent strip lights to an audience of tantrums who've eaten too much sugar. And because this is hell, the knob to control the heating is broken, the heckler in row four is sweating garlic, and you can't ignore the sea of arms clawing at your cellulite-ridden thighs, or her tortured voice screaming, "I'm a celebrity! Get me out of here!" Thank you.
Nice one, Mel. Next up is Rab Urquhart.
Sorry, 2 seconds. Yeah. Sometime today, Rabbi. I'll be quick.
And you always underestimate how tall I am.
I thought you were the same height as me, that's how
I am. Yeah, hang on a minute. Well, there's just a bit of feedback on the mic, we could hear it in the middle of the room. Maybe you could. If you know the point of balance, you can settle the details. If you can settle the details, you can stop running around. Once you can stop running around, your mind will become calm. When your mind becomes calm, you can think in front of a tiger. When you can think in front of a tiger, you will surely succeed. Yeah.
Thank you, Rob. Next is Patricia Walsh.
Thank you. This is about manufactured music. A totally unfair system bears repeating. 5 minutes of solitude weeks silence away. A dance macabre while seated, a common ground. Linked to the inevitable, welcome and waiting. Every hill lofty, carcinogenic ambition. Multicolored stripes heating up already. Hiding the massacre, too often realizing. To be delusional as king, operative mode. Bold holes for demolition, ugly yet necessary. Soaring abomination purposely discrepant. Misspelled attention, engendering favor. Being on time is luxury still permitted. Walking like a sandwich board, pert and purposeful. Erasing names like a blackboard, cutting crap. Cases to answer while hope obliterates. Windows of failure hop off each other. Symmetrical desires, zero incisions granted. Intrusive concerns berated just like that. Rob Turner's up operative, seating allowed. Original cast celebrating what is the saber. Intransigent folks garnered even heroic. A simplistic mess sprouting fine. Tourists played by choice, resting Evie. Bouncing off ideas and kill semblance of fun. The menacing cars, Shakespeare into night. Amplified frames and journey into light. Having no manners, invading space. Boring into souls of grand repartee. Some creature in black, burnishing a paper. Seated with a colleague, conversation bereft. Falsified life under cover of cigarettes. Biding time, crashing boredom at will. Ceaseless boundaries, respecting distance. Caterwauling about privacy, a righteous act. Bleeding obvious once you learn how. A garrulous feud finale to a cancerous action. Thank you.
Thank you, Patricia. And next is Kieran McCartan.
A country that takes the piss out of its own good, middle-aged, middle class, is the name of this poem. My clever phone is going to find it for me. My clever phone, kid. Working so to serve my time as an honest man until I graduate a liar. All the good ones sweat. All the good ones are a safe bet. The good are predictable in their intention. Coping with convention, heads and hearts in contention. The opening words they say are such an easy giveaway. I'm all good, I pray. Hate is such an easy game to play. That good man is 40 old, 80 doing what he's told, thanking his Lord for the debt he was sold. Gamble on his growth, swear it down in oath. I'll bet he'll eat when he's hungry. I'll bet he'll reach into his purse when stricken with thirst. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon. I'm going to end the night with a poem by a 3-year-old girl. I'm doing my dissertation on the stories that children tell, and in the setting that I work in, I brought in a microphone, and if the children want to tell a story, they can come and tell a story into the microphone. And I think some of the things that I've come up with are brilliant, so it's quite hard to choose which one to read. But and also, the stories have, possibly because a lot of the literature that children are exposed to is in verse form, a lot of the stories have this verse-like quality. So I'll read you one here from my clever phone. Once upon a time, there was a horse, and then there was a walking, then it walked on a ting-tee, and then it whooshed, and it whooshed, and then it weared a hat. And then it weared a baby. And then there was a tunt. Then it always wanted to decide where it was. Then 2 little birds upside down. And so many were there. And 2 little puppies. And 2 little birds upside down. So I wanted to tell you where they are. So say, where are you? And say that. And then they thought, where are you? Then it walked, and then it looked in here. Then it saw, and then it hatched. And then there was another horse, standing by on the button. And then something came, and then choo-choo, choo-doo, dinosaur. Then it looked in here, then it looked here, then it spied in here. And he said, help! Get me out, Stunty! And then it thought, walking and stunch, and something definitely wanted him. The end.